before we got to 2023, did you have any idea kind of what was ahead for this year? How much of it was kind of already planned and how much of it just happened?
Well, we knew that the documentary, It's Only Life After All, was in the works because they've been working on it for like three, almost 4 years, I guess, by the time, you know, it premiered at Sundance. But we didn't know, I forget when we learned exactly, but we didn't know until a certain point that it was at Sundance. So we had no idea that that was going to happen. And then we knew that Glitter and Doom was in the works, but we didn't find out about Barbie until later in the year. And that was a total shocker. So to answer your question, no, I mean, we knew we had some things in the work, like the two films, but no idea about Barbie.
Yeah. And I think we, you know, for us, we had put a record out during the pandemic. So, which was kind of, you know, it was sort of a great time and a odd time to put a record out at the same time. But so our expectations were just that we would get out there and rediscover playing live in front of people and not just over Zoom and, you know, kind of play these songs and do our thing. And, you know, we have a really cool audience that's been super loyal over the years and just, you know, like, I mean, a gift, because not everybody has that longevity in an audience. And, you know, we don't know. We just feel lucky. But so, yeah. And then things, I guess just things started to feel, well, the shows always, that when we came back out, felt really magical and just super loaded with emotion and spirit, you know, and joy and all that stuff in the face of all the stuff that had happened as well during pandemic, you know, the, all the Black Lives Matter marches and all the people that had suffered and lost a lot, and in the music industry, a lot of people that lost a lot, and just in the world, you know, poverty, just really the poverty level, you know, went high in certain places that just didn't have access to resources. And it was a hard time to see the disparity, I think, between who had resources and who didn't. And, you know, even in the US, in small towns and, you know, where I live, and I could see it, but then the joy of the music was just palpable and healing, and in some ways, you know, for us and people, hopefully people that were out there. I can't even remember when things started happening, but the Barbie thing, it really kicked off kind of a, you know, a snowball effect in some ways. It's bizarre. I mean, we were like, wow, you know, because all of a sudden there was interviews to do that from, you know, from like the New York Times or NPR or whatever that we hadn't done in a long time, and there hadn't been interest in a long time, right? So it was, I mean, the NPR stuff, we probably, you know, all along, that's been something that would be supportive of us off and on over the years. So it wasn't, but the New York Times thing and like Harper's Bazaar, like really weird, you know, like surprising, like things that people at our age and our level just don't get. You know, like we don't, that's not an opportunity that pops up for us. So it was really fortunate and kind of, you know, took us aback in a good way, I guess, you know.
One of the things I wanted to ask you guys, and we'll get back to Barbie in a second, was the fact that Closer to Fine and Fast Car, the remake of the Tracy Chapman song, were really the songs of the summer. And they were released, what, 11 months apart or something back in the day? So I wanted to ask you guys about that. For women writers and for women songwriters, I think it was, that was a story this summer too.
Well, I mean, I adore Tracy Chapman. So, you know, that was a moment for me of like amazingness, you know, just that someone had the brilliance to record that song and remake it at this time. And I think it's, for me, it's an interesting kind of coming together of like that era of when we were all sort of right before Lilith, and we were all coming out with songs, and a lot of women were, and it's, to me, the zeitgeist now is a lot of really great women writers as well. You know, there was so many people that we were influenced by back in the day that were coming out with music, and Tracy was one of them for me. And now there's all these great new women artists as well that are just, you know, Boy Genius and Billie Eilish and Taylor Swift and camp and all these great bands. And so to me, our song are Closer to Fine, and then, well, Brandi Carlile, and just sort of, it kind of marries together people being ready to sort of in different generations, you know, because it's not going to work if it's just a bunch of older folks going, you know, reminiscing about something and feeling sentimental. It's got to cross into the other things that are happening, you know, and I think that's why, you know, Tracy's song, well, for one thing, it's one of the best songs ever written, but I think people were ready because of what they're seeing, you know, what the younger generations are seeing and what the chances women are being given now. So for me, it kind of made sense and was a really cool thing. But now I'll let Emily, since it's her song, she can speak to that.
Well, I was just going to say, too, I feel like, and, you know, everything that Amy referred to earlier about all the troubles in this nation and the world and, you know, the disparities and all, I really feel like there's sort of a collective sense for a need of songs of substance to some extent. And I think, like, you know, Billie Eilish's song, What Was I Made For? I forget the name of it exactly, but that's a very sensitive sort of philosophical song that really struck a nerve with people. And Fast Car, you know, I have no idea how Luke Combs came to choose that song to record, but it had to strike something in his heart as well. So, and I know that, you know, Greta Gerwig, that Closer to Fine had a place in her nostalgia, but also it had a place, like Amy was saying, it's not just nostalgia. I was overwhelmed by the fact that that song had a place in the themes of the movie, actually, that it actually was part of, was connected to the story. It wasn't just like a soundtrack song. And so, you know, she intentionally picked that song because of some, the substance of it that struck or aligned with some of the vision for her film. So I really do feel like there's more of a need and a want and a tolerance for songs with substance, particularly from women, because, you know, historically we've always been sort of like shot down or stigmatized or whatever for either the content of our songs or the fact that we were queer women with guitars or whatever. But I think that there's a broader audience, you know, and Boy Genius, as Amy said, is like, it typifies that. But there's just a whole slew of great women songwriters now, young women. And I think that there's something, it's not just happening by accident. It's of this time and for a reason. So it was a thrill, you know, on a very, like, on a simple level, it was absolute thrill to be included in Barbie. You know, first it was like, we heard about it and I was like, oh, Barbie, oh, we better look into this. It's about Barbie. And then in the hands of Greta Gerwig, it's like a no-brainer. Yeah, we're moving forward with this. And so it just dropped out of the sky like a gift. And then I really do believe that it gave us a shot in the arm, so to speak, and a resurgence. And we're noticing younger people in the audiences, a more diverse audience. But a lot, I look out and I see young women or kids, and I'm like, "Who? How do you know about our music?" And it's, so there's a lot of momentum. And I just think it's a great thing, because when you've been around for 40 years and then you feel a new energy, like Amy and I are always drawn to what young people are interested in and what causes they've attached themselves to, and sort of like the way that young people move the world forward. So to have our music connecting with a younger audience to some extent is really thrilling.